I'm going to call the Legislative and Human Resources Committee meeting to order. Ms. Wheeler, will you do the roll call?
Yes. Trustee Morrison Butler.
Here.
Trustee Scott.
Here.
Trustee Kerr.
Here.
Trustee Samuels.
Ms. Wheeler, will you verify that a meeting notice was posted?
Yes, the meeting notices were posted.
All right, thank you. First action item is we need to approve the previous minutes.
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Somebody second?
Second.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Morrison Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
All right. Dr. Williams, are you?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of give you an update since the Illinois General Assembly finished its work in June or May or June. Not a lot has happened since then other than on the political side. At Chicago State University, we had Senator, U.S. Senator Roland Burris on campus September 10th. He did a business expo, and it was well attended. We had probably 10 exhibitors who was here on campus. And as a result of that initiative, he invited 5 of our interns to work in his office through the end of his term. So I thought that was a good thing. We continue to follow up on our capital dollars in Springfield, and I'm told that we are making some headway. We have been working closely with Senator Don Trotter and also Senator Kimberly Lightfoot from the west side of Chicago to make certain we get the money that we have requested. On the research side, when the library first opened, I did an exhibit of black lawmakers who have served in the Illinois General Assembly since 1867. And I have a photo exhibit downstairs on the third floor, and that is now being reinvigorated since we have an archivist, a new archivist here on campus. He has asked me to do some research and also to serve as an advisor to continue that project. And also, I've been in conjunction with that, I've been reappointed by the Presidential Lincoln Library and Museum to work on the oral history of Illinois black lawmakers. And that project, I will certainly collaborate with the library. Another big initiative that we are undertaking is that Illinois public universities now have to offer early voting beginning October 12th through the 28th. And we have now set that process up in collaboration with the student affairs of Mr. Jason Ferguson. And Mr. Langdon Neal will be coming to campus on October 12th to do a major press conference or kickoff for this event. Because from what I understand, there's one other university that feels that they don't have to cooperate as far as doing the early voting. So we will be highlighted as a university that's cooperating in terms of this whole early voting process. And our students will be working half-day schedules as far as the whole voter registration process and serving as registrar. And I can say that Mr. Jason Ferguson has really pumped up the effort. He's very energetic. He has a lot of vision in terms of how we should implement this project with respect to competition among the student groups in terms of who bring in the most voters. So we will have a major competition on that front.
What surprise?
Was Dr. Watson?
I think he said
an iPad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that the floor is 200 new registered voters and who will vote, and that's my understanding. In April, I believe it was in April, we learned that our PBI status had been lost.
What's PBI?
The predominantly black institution. And what it does is that it allows us to apply for millions of dollars on a federal level. And once we learned about that, we worked closely with Congressman Davis and our congressional delegation to restore that. So now we will be able to qualify for millions of dollars under the new PBI initiative because we had a black male grant of approximately $1 million. So had we not restored that status, we would not have been able to, you know, get money to further that program.
Do we understand how that was allowed to expire? Was that maybe a process issue, or
was a personnel issue in terms of transition? So, but we were able to restore that. We worked closely with the congressional delegation to restore that, and they were very sensitive to the whole transition process. In fact, we learned that there were 75 other HBCUs who had missed that deadline because it was something that was published in the Federal Register, and Chicago State wasn't the only institution that missed that deadline. In fact, that's the first time that we've been asked to recertify ourselves as a PBI, and of course the HBCU as well. So that's a new a guideline that we were totally caught us off guard.
Okay. Irma, where does that show up in our budget?
Pardon me?
Where does that show up in our budget?
Well, it would show up on the federal side in terms of federal grants that Dr. Yvonne Harris would report on. Yeah.
Okay.
Just interesting, sometimes, you know, organizations do reorganize. Obviously, we have been involved in one. Sometimes something like that is almost a wake-up call. So
right.
Dr.
And
Mitchell,
it was.
It's just interesting to see as we wrestle with the way that we've reorganized the workforce, you know, are we now, having had this happen, maybe taking a look at other important deadlines to make sure that things are properly reassigned?
Right, and which we've done, you know.
Okay.
And that assignment has been made to the new VP for sponsor programs.
Okay.
So that doesn't, you know, fall through the cracks again. And on the downside, we learned that we were not put on any congressional delegation list as far as the earmarks. We were hoping to get $11 million for that, but we were not put on Senator Durbin's list, Congressman Jackson,
Do we understand why? Have we had a chance to look into, meet with any staffers?
There were some political things that were going on in D.C. On the other side, they made a big issue about it, so I'm told that might have had something to do with it, but it had nothing to do with us, you know, missing a deadline or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to try to go after those funds again next year. So we really need to reassess, you know, our strategy and,
and
human capital on that project. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who's assigned to government affairs?
I'm government affairs, but we have a lobbyist in who does the federal.
Who is that?
His name is Greg Gill, and he's with Venerable Associates.
And was he the person who was supposed to be working with that?
Mm-hmm.
How long have we been working with him?
We've been working with him since January of last year.
And so one of his first big exercises would have been this.
Yes, exactly.
So we ought to reassess that relationship.
Right. I would agree.
Is the president here?
He's in the hall.
We need to agree. We need to reassess that relationship and see if when the full board meets, we can have some discussion on. That's a lot of money.
That's an awful lot of money. Mm-hmm.
And it's too late for us to try and resurrect our status in that regard.
Yeah, it's too late because the deadline was, I want to say June, but we were not informed until late August.
Who told us about the fact that we missed the mark? Who told us?
A venerable and associate informed us.
So when would they have gotten word?
Probably in August is my understanding. Yeah,
is that when the decisions come out?
Yes, and that's based on the federal budget process.
And it did give us some kind of extensive explanation on why we were not selected?
Other than we didn't make the list.
other than that. And we're paying these people dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And how long is our contract with them?
Through January of next year.
We had a written contract with them?
Yes.
Does any of we'll have to have our lawyer look at that contract.
Right, right.
Yeah, because that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So was that in our budget, and is there now a hole there? Did we plan on that money?
Well, for next year, yes. But we have to reassess that.
And that was included in our budget that we approved.
Mm-hmm. For FY 10? Yeah.
Was there any direct communication between
11?
Senator Durbin's office or Jackson's office or from the university?
From university?
Is it all through the lobbyist?
Pretty much all through the lobbyist, but also we had some of our staff, researchers to communicate with Senator Durbin as well as Congressman Jackson's office. So we weren't the only people communicating with those offices.
Was our president, I can ask President, were you used as part of our advocacy process to try and get more dollars?
I was used to a limited extent. I would feel much more comfortable if Dr. Rachel Lindsay was here, because she had a lot more specific insight as to the funding that we did or did not receive. Mm-hmm. A lot of the funding that we get comes through the College of Arts and Sciences. Mm-hmm. That's one. Two is, I heard mention of the PBI. The loss of PBI happened right around December, right. November, December, and that was before the current lobbyist group came on.
Mm-hmm.
That was under the old lobbyist group, the company we had prior to. And I guess the third observation that I have is that we did not get, with Roland Burris regrettably being labeled as a lame duck, Roland's ability to provide any set-asides was very, very, very limited, extremely so. Durbin, we aggressively tried to relate to Durbin and could not get any connectivity with Durbin.
With him directly or with his chief of staff or his education
liaison? We tried to get it with him.
And
then we tried to get it with his
chief of staff.
Okay. And we were given to an assistant, administrative assistant in Durbin's office.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say an open mic, but let me just say that we are not pleased with Senator Durbin and his interaction.
Maybe we should ask for another meeting now.
Pardon me?
We did. In fact, we submitted a written request.
Okay.
Just, I want to say maybe about a month ago with Senator Durbin.
And you still haven't heard.
Madam Provost, could you ask Dr. Lindsay?
Pardon me?
Okay. Is Alexei? Are you working through Alexei Snodgrass?
We're working with a Durbin.
That's one of the key people in his office.
His education policy person, mm-hmm. his name is Lexi. I can't remember her last name. I think it's like Snodgrass or something.
I think
because
you're right.
It's mind-boggling to me that you're getting that kind of reaction.
Yeah. Or that kind of treatment that you can't get a senator's attention.
Right.
We were able to sit with Roland Burris on two occasions. I mean, very open, very direct with us. He was willing to do anything he could, but to be quite honest, Roland, he was lame duck, and they weren't giving him, they gave him very little.
And I appreciate that, but one of the things, I mean, Dr. Williams, when you talked about revisiting the strategy,
mm-hmm.
one of the things we need to figure out how to do then is when the institution is faced with that, then that's the thing that board members need to know about as it's happening, because that's the kind of thing where then you say to your board, would each of you send an email, would each of you reach out and say to Senator Durbin's office, excuse me, my name is Lisa Morrison Butler, I'm the executive director of City of Chicago. By the way, I just saw Lexi, she came here.
Mm-hmm.
And visited City Year. So I had no idea that you were having trouble with them, or I could have said, Lexi, I'm sitting on the board of Chicago State, and they are trying desperately to meet with you. So, it's literally an email to the board. It's saying, make this call, and then, by the way, three message points.
Mm-hmm.
So when we think about our strategy going forward, there ought to be stuff that's like 90% baked. Here's the message. Lisa, here are the numbers or the emails. I need you to call and do these things so that it's very easy then for people to be supportive of you when you're clearly struggling to get the attention of someone that you deserve to have their attention. You know, they're not doing anything that major that they shouldn't be paying attention to an institution the size of Chicago State.
And now you're saying that we approached again a month ago and we still haven't heard.
No response.
So would there be, would it help to start with a letter from the board?
Sure.
With all signing.
And that would be
that
helpful.
That goes to the senator.
I think hearing, getting, as Lisa said, getting emails, particularly from there are a couple of us that know her.
Right.
Saying, what the heck's going on here? We've not been able to meet. Can you help me figure this out?
One of the things that Cityear does, we actually will craft that email, and the board members will send the exact same email. It lets them know what's going on. It makes them realize right away that they're being ambushed because all of a sudden they get the exact same wording from every one of my board members. So if you'll draft it, you could send it to us. We could then cut and paste and turn around. When you send it, send her email address, and if you don't have it, you can get it from, it sounds like from Betsy or I. Then she ought to get that cut and pasted email from everyone's individual address.
In fact, I thought about, you know, how do we engage the board members even on the state side? Because sometimes we do have the same issue on the state side, particularly trying to get our capital dollars released. You know, and that would be great to
try to make this more of a routine kind of a thing as opposed to not having to invent it.
The other very key point is that when I think I went to Washington, and one of the times I went to Washington was February or March, and met with a number of our congressional leaders' office. And what I was told in Jesse's office, Danny did everything he could, Bobby, but what I was told was, hey, listen, it's already been set. You come in here in February. You need to come here in November. You need to come, you know, get us what you need in November so we can queue it then. So,
are you doing that this November?
Yeah,
right?
That's our goal, is to do it this November. So that.
But my question is, what kind of advice are we getting from people that we are from the employing lobbies to help us with the
That came from the company that we just employed. They were with us. I don't think we got them under employment until maybe February, March.
January.
Yeah.
January, February.
So they went with us, and they were standing with us, but we had actually missed it's not a deadline, but it's an unofficial.
Right, the correspondence point.
We came to the party late. By the time we got to Washington, and got our feet on the ground, we should have been in there in like November.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing, Dr. Watson, and I appreciate that, but organizationally, we've got to have these key dates on our radar screen so that whether someone's new or not, there's institutional knowledge that has to be in place so that any new person can get plugged in.
I agree.
And so whatever that calendar is for legislative activity, somebody needs to hand that to you when you walk in the door and say, Dr. Watson, this is your thing. And so part of what we can do, I believe in looking forward. So, you know, part of what we can do is figure out what all can we learn from the $11 million problem that we currently have. And there's a piece of it that is setting our own legislative calendar. There is another piece of it which is figuring out what the tactics would be to get the board involved really quickly, things that would be turnkey, because you know how we all are. So if you send the email and you send the content, it's like the least I can do is cut and paste. And then the other piece goes back to what Trustee Scott is talking about, which is, do we have the right partners on this?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that seems unforgivable to me, maybe it's because I'm closer to all of you all, and so I know how much reorganization we've been through, and I understand that we can miss things. I don't understand how a professional lobbyist could have allowed us to get to this point where all that we did was hear from them in August that, oops, it's not going to happen. So I really do think we have an opportunity looking forward to take a real good look at them and figure out whether or not they are proactive enough to be our partner.
Okay.
I agree. And a couple of the side notes, on Monday, the National Black Caucus of State Legislators, as well as the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus, decided to have their planning meeting here at Chicago State for its conference coming up in 2011. So I think that's an excellent thing with 300 black lawmakers across the country, and we have 30 here in Chicago. And what it does is it puts Chicago State on a national map. In fact, Dr. Watson will be going to Atlanta in December of this year to be part of a panel to talk about issues around the PBI as well as the, in fact, Dr. Richardson, former president of Morgan State, will go out there and talk about the issues around the HBCUs.
Congratulations.
So that's, I think that's a major
that's
coup for us. And we're going to explore with them using Chicago State as a venue for
yes.
some of their events next year. So
okay.
I'm excited about that.
To bring that income in, right?
Yeah, to bring the income in because they do have a budget, you know, so
right.
it's not going to be in kind on Chicago State's part.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Good.
On November 10th, in order to help capitalize on our political capital, we will be inviting 10 lawmakers here to Chicago State who are alums of Chicago State University and the Illinois General Assembly. Because what we need to do now is that we need to identify champions in the Illinois General Assembly since Emo Jones is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to kind of focus on developing those kinds of relationships with the members who are alums of Chicago State University.
Before we need them. Before we need the relationships.
That's Pardon me?
Develop them before we need
right.
them.
Starting in November because critical... It's going to be critical for us, obviously, during the veto session. I mean, we already have relationships with them, but we want to make certain we reinforce
mm-hmm.
Those relationships going forward, especially with the January session coming up. So
good.
That's a key strategy.
Do they need to be alums? Because I can think of some who aren't who would be interested.
Well, the strategy for now
okay.
going forward is alums.
So they're
okay.
your tier one.
Yeah,
group.
In tier one.
Okay.
And then also eventually we will invite other... legislators, you know, to campus, but
okay.
the focus is to do the alums who are Chicago State graduates.
Okay.
And then we also have former legislators who are CSU alums who are also willing to help us, and they help us a lot in Springfield. And I think that for Springfield, we have Springfield covered, but the federal, you know, I think we need to really look at that.
So this includes okay. a federal as well as
no,
state.
No, only state.
Oh, only state.
Only state.
Rachel.
So that's my report.
Can I back up and ask you one question? On those meetings, Dr. Watson, with Senator Lightford and Senator Trotter to continue to talk about the West Side campus, with the challenges that we're having getting funds released from the state, kind of what's our sequencing? You know, on the one hand, you're having discussions that are very aggressive. On the other hand, we're still trying to simply get dollars that are currently owed.
They have drawn a very hard line between that $40 million and anything happening in Chicago State.
Okay.
And we have told not to even try and, don't even try and mix it up.
Okay.
You know, of course one might say, well, can we have part of that 40 to save us, to save some of our buildings over here? The line has, I mean, it's literally a brick wall that the president of the Senate, Ricky Hendon, Lightfoot, I mean, they have made it very clear. We have been aggressive to see if we could reach across. I don't see that happening.
So technically, then, when you think about it, especially in lieu, I know, of your goal to be able long-term to reduce dependence on state government for funding, that means then that when we're looking at expanding to a West Side campus, one of the questions we have to be able to ask ourselves is, would that thing be able to be, you know, self-sustaining?
Yeah. And that is one of the questions. Not questions, but it's one of the requirements
okay.
that I have put forward to Senator Ricky Hendon and Lightfoot, stating that if we, you know, if this ever becomes a reality, we must have operational dollars.
Yeah.
Operational dollars not only for the maintenance and upkeep, but also operational. You can't build a campus and then say, okay, where are we going to get the faculty and administrators?
Mm-hmm.
You also have to
right.
fund the administrators and the faculty for the first 2 to 3 years to keep it, to get it going. So there are operational dollars, and when I mentioned it, it was like light bulbs going off in people's heads saying, oh.
Okay.
So that's being, there's some teachable moments that are taking place, and So those discussions are taking place.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Dr.
Dr. Lindsay is here.
I understand you had a question regarding
federal funding.
Federal funding. Mm-hmm. In the past, when we have received federal funding, when we have received congressionally directed mm-hmm. funding, we have received support on the House and the Senate side. Mm-hmm. On the Senate side, in the past, we've received support from Senator Obama and others. Usually, almost always, on the House side, we receive support from, in the past, when we were in another district, it was
Bobby Rush.
Bobby Rush. And now that we are in Congressman Jackson's office district, mm-hmm. it would be him. We rarely have received support, if ever, from Senator Durbin.
Okay.
So in order for these things to happen, you have to have, as you know, support on both sides. And this year, all the information that I received from people indicated that Representative Jackson was not supporting.
Right.
So therefore,
can we add a clarity there? It's not that he was not supporting.
I'm sorry.
He was not that he, positioned.
He, for whatever reasons, personal reasons that he mm-hmm. may have had, there
political,
was
political
no
reasons.
Support forthcoming from that office.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, my sense is, my understanding is, and when I talked to the lobbyist, indicated that that was for no one. So without having.
That was for no one. Explain that. That he wasn't
supporting. As far as the reports I have received, there no one got support from that office.
No institution of higher learning. No.
I know.
For earmarks. Period.
No earmarks. Relative to what I know, I have heard of no one, no office, no entity, institution who had received support
from Jackson.
So I think you're making some good points, and I just want to make sure I've got them because they are subtle, but they do clarify things a bit. The fact that Senator Obama was essentially replaced by Senator Burris, who is then perceived as a lame duck, that was not necessarily the top level champion that we would have liked to have had. The other Illinois Senator Durbin doesn't really have a history with us, and therefore,
and I might say we have visited his office in the past.
Okay.
Requesting support, and without the microphone, I can give some more comment about
it. We can have some off sidebar conversations.
I guess the point of it is that we need to really be able to bring to the board a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has to look as if it has thought and precision and
cohesion relative to the mission of the institution.
That we're going to meet with some success.
Yeah.
This is not something that, you know, we need to, it needs to be thoughtful.
Make a comment about that? In the past, that had happened. We would go with a book defining the legislative requests from the university. The individuals with whom we met would say, well, I support this, I won't support that. That's how we got the support for pharmacy, for example, in the year that other requests were made, but none of the individuals we talked to were prepared to carry water for some of those other requests. So there has been some effort for that. The primary issue this year, I think, is that the individual upon whom we must depend was not there, and that would have been Representative Jackson. Mm-hmm.
All right.
And same thing on the senator side.
Because of the status.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So I think the strategy, and I absolutely support that, I think part of that strategy then needs to also include sort of that triage effort, because we have to be able as an organization to then recognize when we're in trouble, and we need to recognize that when there's still a window where we could take action. And so I think that there's a couple things that seem to have gotten in the way of that this year. Number one, it seems like the lobbyists that we were relying on for a good deal of the information, that we didn't necessarily get that update, according to what Dr. Williams was saying, until August, at which point it's like, okay, so you're in trouble and it's dead and you can forget about it. So there's a piece of it that's that. But then there also has to be some checks and balances that we can own ourselves as an institution, so that then you could flip the switch on the board support piece that we kind of talked about right before you were coming in the door. You know, what could the board have done for you during a certain time frame?
Okay. And also, I might want to say, I guess we got some inkling that we probably wouldn't get much support from Congressman Jackson probably about a year ago, because we placed an intern with his office, and the intern was sent back, you know, saying that the congressman had a lot of other pressing issues, so really didn't have time to focus on.
I knew nothing about that.
Well, and I appreciate, I mean, you know, I recognize that this didn't work the way that maybe we should have. I'm seeing this through the broader lens, which is, you know, as an organization, Chicago State has tried to do some very aggressive things around cost cutting. There have been some very controversial moves made in terms of things that we've done with staff, with tenured professors, et cetera, et cetera. And so in that environment, to let a mistake essentially result in the loss of $11 million in funding in the next year, that's a really serious issue.
And it has serious issues relative to the point Trustee Hill was making earlier about the impact on student learning, because students participated in those particular projects that were directed by faculty. And in addition, the support for the facility on Cottage Grove came out of that, as well as the benefits that students receive from the F&A or indirect costs that come from those kinds of grants. So it's multi-tiered. And I might add that in the past, and this was some time ago before the current administration, when I went, we would visit other individuals such as Bobby Rush. And I think there was not enough information, as Dr. Brooks Williams indicated, to suggest that maybe there would be, that we should think about other avenues to implement. We just didn't get that information in time.
Another also, very important variable is that we, how do you say it, we had a change in our executive director of sponsored programs.
Right.
The person who is over all federal funds in terms of external funds coming in through development.
Right.
That person changed in what?
March.
March. Okay.
January.
So we had a change there. So the person who's over all federal funds, we made an administrative change. The senator, the congressman, we had some, it was like a perfect storm. A new president. New president came in, and a new lobbying group.
And it, also what we did do with the lobbyists at his request, we packaged everything, got letters, and we sent all that information out no later than February, is when we, once we brought him on board in January. So we sent everything to Durbin, Jackson, you know, our main people.
But it was too late by then.
Well, right.
It was too late.
You're also asking when you need it, which is not.
Right. So like I said, obviously November.
The timelines that they have, but you also have to either here or in D.C. through the lobbyist make your case.
Mm-hmm.
And with a new firm.
Okay.
I think we should also capitalize on the fact that there are going to be some elections coming up. So people who normally might have been ignoring us might pay a closer amount of attention to, you know, emails from the board and, you know, different strategies to not just deal with one representative, but to bombard all of them, because out of one of what, about 10 or so we have, somebody's going to listen with the upcoming elections if a university is petitioning their assistance.
And then what we're doing, what is it, October 12th, Dr. Watson, we bring in Congressman Kirk. He requested to come here on campus, and he's a Republican congressman. So we're hoping to be able to leverage not just, you know, with Democratic members.
Make some new friends.
Yeah, make new friends.
When is that?
October 12th at noon, from noon until 2.
He's my congressman. Okay, yeah. He's currently my.
What kind of an event is that?
It's a public policy forum. He's going to talk about higher education and also foreign policy issues. He's coming here. He requested to come here as a sitting congressman and not as an elected official. I mean, not as a politician.
Okay. And I think, Trustee, your point is, both of you, we can't just depend upon those individuals in whose districts we reside. Right. We need to branch out on both sides in both houses to make sure that we do that. And I think historically we have focused too much on the Democratic side and not enough on whoever the Republican person may be. And I think we need to rethink through the lobbyists the strategy because, particularly because of the shift in thinking about congressionally directed funding. And so therefore, the competition is stiffer and it's harder to get that kind of support.
Well, so I can see a link here to providing information and support for education for our students. I think students ought to be actively doing this as well.
Okay,
and I would say maybe there could be some section on our website that would be something, get involved, support this program. Here are the issues we're confronting as a university. It's to your benefit to do this. Here's the latest issue. Contact this person about this thing. And so that we can really get the students engaged in political activity as well.
And we
have a major effort that's going to be taking place in the next 2 weeks. Dealing everything from voter registration to on Spirit Day, where we're working with the students in SGA, all of the different Greek clubs, all of the different clubs, political science students, where we're trying to get our students to a where they're redoing research right now, ready for Kirk to come on campus, ready for Giannoulias to come on campus, ready for Quinn to come on campus. And the position is that we're not going to let them walk on campus and just give their stump speech. We have students are doing research with some very focused questions to each one of these individuals that's going to leverage them to what are you going to prepare to do for higher education in general, and what are you going to do, what are you prepared to do for Chicago State University?
But, and I appreciate that, and I think that's good. There's a piece of this, though, that I think is process. There's a piece of this which is simply, do we know, for our own various initiatives, do we know the key dates? And what's the trigger for us to make sure that we then are on the phone with the right people? Mm-hmm. So we should have been calling the lobbyist or whatever, you know. So if you know the federal appropriations process, then like you're saying, Dr. Watson, about, okay, so it starts in November. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just want to make sure also that there's sort of a process in place that so that the people in the process are working together. There is a dizzying array of funding opportunities that the university has to keep track of. And so I think I am a little fearful to think that, you know, as we maybe have reorganizations or as new talented people come on, and maybe it takes you, I don't care how great you are, it takes you 6 months to get up to speed. Well, if in 6 months there's like, you know, crucial funding opportunities that might be happening and you don't get the trigger, that to me is a process issue in addition to then strategy. So I want to be sure as we move forward that, and I know that you guys are, you know, you're battling a lot of stuff. I think this is a problem we don't ever want to have again, is all I'm saying. So I'm looking for a way to make sure we would never be here again.
I'd like to make one additional comment, and I think it was Trustee Samuels was talking about, initiated the conversation about student involvement. One year, on Higher Ed Lobby Day, faculty and students went and wanted to talk about the initiative of the new Science and Technology Center. And students went to see one of the senators who did not want to talk to the faculty, who only wanted to talk to the students. And so I think your point is very well taken. They are much more likely to shun us as faculty and administrators, but they rarely, if ever, shun students. And to have students being able to articulate very effectively and answer very serious questions, that challenging questions that the legislators may bring forward, is really has been an advantage for us.
Right. And that's what we did this past April. We took students down to Springfield to be part of our lobbying team.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yes, because to me,
and it doesn't cost much, but DC is a different.
What I see is a bleak future of people who are not civically engaged.
Yes,
and
yes.
I see the potential in this university to turn that around through this sort of an activity. I'd like to see students get an email alert that says this bill is up. Write your senator, and here's what you tell them. I get those, and I respond to them,
right.
And I think it educates them, and that would be again. This is what I'd like students to who leave this university are prepared to be fully operating citizens of this country, and engaged. And this is fundamental to our democracy. So I look forward to that.
Okay.
Well, let me do this. I don't want to thank you, Trustee Samuels. I know we want to move through the rest of the agenda and have time for public and employee comments. So I think that what we've heard today is a very strong reaction to the loss of the $11 million. I think we've all been very vocal about that. Are there any other questions from the committee or the board in general for Dr. Brooks Williams?
No.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Next, we will hear from Dr. Mitchell with a human resource update.
Good afternoon, Board
Good
Trustees.
Afternoon.
How are you?
Good afternoon.
For the record, I'm Renee Mitchell, Director of Human Resources. And my report for this quarter is fairly short. But I am happy to report that it's fairly short because we've been in the process of implementing quite a few things. We have successfully implemented People Admin as of August 1st, which is our new the first module of our electronic application process. So it reduces the paper that we've received from resumes, as well as we can now effectively identify any diversified applicants that we've received so we can comply with EEOC, et cetera.
Has that also helped you then wrestle with one of the challenges you had when you first came in, which was all of the different classifications for jobs? And so does it help simplify and sort of manage and control what the different jobs are department to department?
Well, it actually helps us with position management.
Okay.
So we will have an electronic, another system in which we can identify what positions are currently filled, by whom they are filled,
okay.
who they report. We'll have a better sense of identifying what positions are being duplicated and what positions are not.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. In addition to that, we also did our direct deposit initiative, where we are reducing approximately $175,000 a year by not producing pay stubs and checks. So we have 90% of our employees are receiving direct deposit. The other 10% are coming around slowly because we are mailing their checks. And electronics, our pay stubs are now electronic, where everyone can see their pay stub online.
Okay.
The third thing is our pilot of the web time entry. As discussed before, we're currently doing time cards for a lot of our civil service, our students, and extra help, which is taking up approximately a week and a half in processing for our payroll system. And so we are doing a pilot that started September 1st, with approximately 20 students to identify if our web time entry system will be able to be utilized throughout the campus, which would then reduce the amount of time that we take to process payroll. It would also reduce the errors that we're currently facing with inputting the wrong information, and we can correct anything that is done by any individual in enough time to still provide that individual with a check within the 2-week period.
Okay.
Going forward, we still plan on doing training on people admin and looking more in depth on whether this web time entry is the process that we would like to utilize. But in addition to that, in addition to continuing our efforts to improve operational efficiencies, we're also going to focus on employee development and performance management, which is also through our people admin system. So it's also a module that will fit into that, that fits into that system. We just have not rolled it out yet. In addition, we are looking to expand our employees' knowledge around finance for personal well-being. So as mentioned before, Human Resources has started this Wellness Wednesday. And Wellness Wednesday is every third Wednesday of the month where we help employees sort of feed their financial, emotional, personal souls. And so we have various individuals come in to speak for free. They volunteer, so we have a lot of individuals who want to come in to speak. And they provide our employees with various information. In addition to that, we are looking at the vendors that we currently have and looking at what we are able to offer our employees to help feed that financial and get them more educated for their personal lives. We are looking to bring in Ing as a financial advisor and one of our 403Bs participants because they are willing to sign our shared information agreement. Mm-hmm. We are also looking to bring in Aflac because we currently have Prudential as a supplemental insurance. However, that only helps for disability. Aflac will help sort of round that package off by providing insurance for anybody who's interested for any life event that may occur where they're not working. And so it doesn't say that they are permanently disabled. They may only be off for 6 weeks, but this would be an insurance for them. Both of these vendors are at no cost to the university. It is a personal and optional election for the individual if that's what they choose to do. But we would like to offer this as an option to our employees.
Can I ask, in this kind of support, is it just financial support? Do you offer other kind? We provide health insurance.
We do provide health
well,
insurance.
What about diet, nutrition, and exercise?
So we've had, and this is just over this year alone, we had, and I wish I could, a championship where we did a 6-week program for diet and health. And so for 6 weeks, we provided various seminars on nutrition, exercise. There was even a nice competition between departments on losing weight for the 6-week period. In addition to that, we also had the community charities here to talk about Alzheimer's, diabetes, and heart disease. And so we have different seminars, not only for financial, but also for the health. We're looking going forward to have different exercise events. We had on every Tuesday, during the summertime, we had an event where people can go into the gym and learn how to line dance. And so we did that for 2 hours. And so people will come in during their lunch and leave and come back. So that was a big hit, and people are still asking for that. So we're looking to do, for one Wellness Wednesday, steppers, where they can come in. And we have employees who actually volunteer to do the instruction for this. And so they just teach the other employees. But it's nice exercise. They bring their own music, but it gives us an opportunity to get together and do do things that's
and
fun and healthy.
Maybe next spring we can start a community garden here and they can all participate in that and
we can add that in there.
All right.
Shameless personal plug there. Let me ask, are these kinds of wellness programs, are these new things for Chicago State or are these new versions of ideas that have been around for a while?
This is new to Chicago State. So we started in January and it has begun to pick up towards the end of the year. At the very beginning, very little participation because it was extremely new, but we send out an email blast as well as put it on up to minute on what's coming up for that Wellness Wednesday. And so based on individuals' interest, they determine whether they want to come in. We have it during the lunch period of 11:30 to 1 so that individuals can come and hear during the time that they're okay. on lunch. If it's something of importance that they cannot stay for the whole thing, we always have information in HR and always have cards where somebody can contact the individual that was presenting.
I have one more question, and that's how this relates to the report we heard about the internal auditor,
mm-hmm.
because it seems to me there is a relationship between your doing all this that you're doing on the website to eliminate problems and second payments and things like that, because he talked about that too.
Yes, so there's a couple of things that we are doing. Right now we're automating a lot of our processes. I want to say a good 85% of our processes are manual. And even if it had an automated component to it, there's a portion of it that's manual. We're trying to automate the entire system so that we are able to catch things in time so that we don't have those errors. So for instance, with payroll, there's a couple of things that we have to put in place and that we're looking to put in place right now. One of it being the process in which managers notify HR that an individual has terminated. So sometimes HR has not been notified that an individual has terminated until after they've received a check. Our people admin system will allow us to be able to keep track of that because we're training our managers right now to put in the system that this is a vacant position. HR receives an email that says one of the changes is this position is now vacant. We moved payroll into HR because we work so closely together with a lot of our processes. So now we have payroll sitting right next to a person who will receive that email so that they can say this person has left. We should take them off of payroll status. In addition to that, as part of the reorganization, we are doing cross-training in various departments. And so I can speak about HR. We are cross-training some of our individuals to be able to just go in the system and do it as opposed to having to give another transmittal paper to payroll for them to do it. And so when we receive the request, instead of handing it off, the person who receives it will be able to process whatever comes through.
Excuse me. In the event that there might be a case where the system goes down, as far as, you know, the web time entry, mm-hmm. is there a backup system or an electronic record of hours that's filed automatically when the employee puts in their hours so that there's no way that those hours could be lost and never found again?
Right. So I'm going to let our IT person speak about that system.
You know, I really want to speak to the issue that comes up constantly at Chicago State regarding concerns of the sufficiency of the IT system. And I understand that's a real concern based on past experience. But Chicago State must step up to the standard of institutions that run their businesses electronically, and that is a 5-9 uptime. That means that in 1,000 days, one time, you may not have services. That's our standard, 5-9's uptime. So, you know, we are not going to spend the money, the time, the effort in building manual, redundant systems. We are going to put our money, our time, and our effort into ensuring that our systems are up and sufficiently hardened as they are in the rest of the world. So if Renee is building a backup system, I'm going to discourage her from doing that because that is an expense that the university cannot afford. We must put our money into making sure that our systems are up and hardened.
So, Trustee Kerr, let me sort of answer that a little differently. With the system that we currently have in place with the web time entry, there's at this point, there's no way that they're going to lose their time. And so let me explain how that happens. There's a couple of things. When right now that we're testing it, when an employee puts in their time, right, there's already a backup system that applies so that you can go back and see what was in there. But in addition to that, individuals aren't really putting it in every day. What we're asking them to do is do it at the end of the week. Now, from a payroll perspective and an IT perspective, we can still see that, okay? So we can see at each point where it is and where it was. So we would be able to go back into the system and see what was entered because it was entered into the system. So it would be like a small footprint in the system for us to be able to view it, even if the individual is not able to view it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Dr. Mitchell? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is the time for any other public or employee comments. If there aren't any,
I move that we adjourn.
Yep.
I second the motion.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Morrison Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
I know. That's really.